Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are on that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It's about engagement. It's about being energized by our life. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or you may be considering your next career. You might be an entrepreneur or a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something's calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when challenges show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's dive in to today's episode. Today's guest is an 8th degree black belt and master instructor and a former national taekwondo champion, and he ranks in the top 1% of all martial artists in the world. Not only is he a champion himself, but he has been training others to find their own inner champion for over 4 decades. He is a life leadership coach, keynote speaker, and author, and his passion is sharing his unique brand of black belt leadership so others may discover the most empowered version of themselves. His name is Chris Natsky, and I think that you'll enjoy getting to know him.
So, Chris, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Bobby. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I've been so looking forward to this. I know you've got such an interesting story that goes back kind of a long way. Right?
It does. Yeah. My background is in martial arts. So I'm an 8th degree black belt and master instructor and former national taekwondo champion. So martial arts is something I've done my entire life. And I literally started my martial art training back in 1973. I always like to joke I was still in the womb at that time, but I was 10 years old, right? And I was a short little chubby kid, didn't, you know, really have a lot of confidence, but I was enamored with the TV show Kung Fu, if some of your listeners remember that, you know, quite.
I remember Jane that. Kane.
You remember that? There you go.
Yeah.
Walking across the American desert, and the bad guys they pick on him, and he takes care of him using his Kung Fu. And I was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And so I begged my mom to let me go to my first class. And I grew up in a little small town in southeastern Wisconsin. So in the early 70s, martial arts wasn't very, you know, proliferated at all. It was really, really wild I could even find it. But I remember I walked in and I watched these guys do their movements and whatever. And I was hooked. I felt like I came home. About 3 years after that, I'd meet a man that would change my life forever. And he's still one of my instructors to this day. I'm so proud to say his name is Grandmaster J.K. Lee. And Grandmaster Lee had recently moved from South Korea. And he had hardly a dime in his pocket. He could hardly speak English, but he had this burning desire to transform lives through martial arts. And wow. So one of the first times I was in his class, I was seated in the back corner of the room and my legs were spread wide. I was stretching out, getting ready for the day's training. And he walked onto the mat with this, like he always did, this amazing power and this amazing presence. And he's surveying all of the students. And pretty soon I realize he's looking directly at me. And before I could move a muscle, he came over and he sat down in front of me and he put his right foot on the inside of one leg, his left foot on the inside of the other. He grabbed the ends of my belt and with one push-pull, he split me out to 180 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like I like to joke, I learned 2 lessons that day. Number one is that anyone on the planet can do the splits one time.
But With help.
With a little help. But what I really learned when I, you know, really thought about this last 4.5 decades or whatever is that he was teaching me how to be a champion in life because he looked me directly in the eyes and he said, I will make you a champion.
Yeah.
I will make you a champion. And so I look back at that time in my life It was probably one of the most impactful times up until that time. And even when I look back, you know, 4.5 decades later, where someone really claimed that for me.
Yeah.
And instantly something inside of me shifted. And as I shared with you before, I don't know where I would have ended up had I not had him as my mentor. You know, yeah. if someone wouldn't have claimed that for me, because it's really become part of my work is now is kind of paying that forward and playing that role for other people.
Yeah. That's really powerful. How many kids were in the class?
Well, you know, here's what's funny about this too, is we think about martial arts basically as a kid's activity nowadays.
That's right.
It was the early 70s. This is before the Karate Kid movie or whatever. and I was like the only kid in the class. I was 13 years
wow.
old. Everybody else was adults in their 20s. That was another thing, just the fact. And, you know, why he pointed me out, did I have some talent? Maybe I did. You know, I always kind of have spoken about him as my angel, right?
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that was what I needed to hear at that time. And then take me on, you know, just a whole awesome trajectory.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And I love how you talked about him as your angel.
And what's so interesting, what's so great about him is, you know, I'm certainly not the only person that he's impacted. You know,
no.
It's literally thousands of people throughout his life. So it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. And we all have that opportunity, I think, to kind of be that person for others.
Amen. Amen. And I'll tell you what, I would hope that most of us have that experience in our lives. And I would hope that most of us would take advantage of that, because I feel there's nothing more exciting and rewarding than to be able to play that role for someone, particularly when someone's played that role for you.
Yep. Yeah. It really does. I think when we tap into that, there's an exercise that I do when I teach my leadership classes, and it's, you know, I have people think about a person in their life, and it doesn't matter from, you know, from early childhood through whatever, where you would say, if it were not for this person, I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
Exactly.
And it's powerful. And, you know, full credit where that was out of my grad school. Richard Boyatzis is actually the one who came up with that exercise, but it is so powerful for people, and it moves them and it stirs them. And it's like, yeah, I want to be that for others.
I think that there's something inherent inside of us that wants that.
Yeah.
We want that person to play that role, and we also want to pay that forward. I think it's something innate. When we really get clear about it, I think it's something innate inside all of us.
Mm-hmm. I think it kind of gets to legacy a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It sure does.
You know, it's the whole it's a wonderful life type thing. How many lives do we get to touch?
That's right.
You know, when we act that way. So that's cool. And now, to be a champion at that level, Chris, you had to learn just a ton of stuff.
The martial arts is definitely a lifetime discipline. You know, it's interesting when we find something that we really love to do, it's not that I didn't work hard. I've worked very hard, but it is work. Does that make sense? You know, it's like enjoy the work. You enjoy the passion that you put into it and even the hardships. And I think that sometimes overcoming the hardships is where the lessons are really the most profound. And those are the things that we're most proud of. You know, you very rarely have people brag about how easy something was, just every once in a while, right? But most of the time, they brag how hard something was and how they got through it, right?
That's right. Yeah. It's so funny that you bring that up, because we were watching something, The Masked Singer. It was something that on TV, every person spoke to how much they loved it, but they were proud of themselves for taking a chance and putting themselves out there. And I thought, you know, most people don't say, wow, I'm so proud of myself for playing it small.
That's right. Exactly. And in fact, I literally just wrote a blog on this the other, and I can't remember who did the quote, but it's, and I'm sure you've heard it before, is that most people on their deathbed don't regret the things they did
as
much as they regret the things they didn't do.
They didn't try. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other piece of that I love, and this is something else I've been thinking about, is we hear, well, when you're in flow, you know, or when you're really engaged, it should be easy. And it's like, no, because like you just said, it's hard work, but you love the work.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. I've been blessed to teach tens of thousands of martial arts students in my career. And it's interesting that what I find is that the ones who stick with it are not the ones, generally speaking, that are super talented at the very beginning.
Really?
They're not the ones where, oh no, not at all. Very rarely, in fact. In fact, I can think in my career of only two students when I first met them that they had everything it took to be a black belt. Focus, concentration, balance, speed, tenacity, all those kinds of things. Only two. But I've had like over 1,200 students get their black belt with me. But the idea is that for most of those students where it became easy, it almost became boring at some point. But the people who came and they stuck with it, then they had that victory, right? They overcame that obstacle. Then it started getting their juices flowing. But yeah, I very rarely, obviously, have seen someone where it comes super easy and that they've stayed with it long term. And I was literally doing a talk a while ago, and there was a former Denver Bronco that was there, and he and I talked afterwards, and he had the same kind of story about not only his career, but also so many people he had seen come through where they were immensely talented, but they never made it, right?
That's right.
For whatever reason.
Wow. That's really interesting, though. And I think there is something to that. Maybe if it comes too easy, it's like, you don't need to put all the full effort in. Wow. All right. And you said something a few minutes ago about overcoming the hardships and how that is what we're most proud of. So your students, I mean, and I know you work with corporations as well. How do people overcome those hardships?
Yeah. Well, we have a saying in martial arts that a black belt is a white belt that never quit.
Mm.
So I think it's basically built into our program, if you will, that, one of the basic tenets of Taekwondo, which is the martial art I teach, we have five basic tenets. They're courtesy, integrity, perseverance, self-control, and indomitable spirit.
Wow.
Right? So it's something that we're constantly talking about. And, when you think about it, we all have challenges that we come upon in our careers and in our lives. In martial arts, it's basically within the very structure of how you advance through rank. So you don't just show up and get a belt. You have to stand in front of a testing board and, and with master instructors, and you need to go through all the things of your curriculum, et cetera. And you got to break boards and you have to do this and that. There's a lot of pressure there, right?
Yeah.
So you have to learn to be able to come through that in order to succeed. But I think when you combine, and I do this in my coaching as well, I mean, you want to be strong and you want to be steadfast for someone, but you also want to set them up for success. When people get that taste of success, they want more, right? They want more and they want to build off of that.
Yeah. I think that it really sets up that momentum and the hunger.
It does. And, that's always been part of my way of teaching and coaching is to be able to, I love this distinction. I have a good friend of mine who's a coach, and she actually gave me this distinction. But she said that, many times in coaching, as well as in leadership, management, in a corporate world, there's a big emphasis put on holding someone accountable.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I think that accountability is amazing. But I love her twist on it. She says, there's more power in holding people capable, which is that it recognizes the greatness, just like my instructor did for me in someone else. And then you hold them capable to that standard. Now it becomes something that is generated from the inside, right?
That's
because
they're
right. Wow, I am capable of this. And you're guiding them through versus, just accountability can sometimes be a little pejorative, right? It can be a little
bit
condescending. So I've always loved that distinction.
I love that because the other one is it's so external. I like that, holding people capable. That's really good. All right. And now I know last time we spoke, you had talked about how do you move through challenging times?
Right.
And I know that you have a kind of, I guess you call it a template for it.
Yeah. I guess I do. In fact, interestingly enough, I'm literally putting the finishing touches on my second book, which is called Breaking Through. And it's about how you move through obstacles. And, that very first one is about creating a vision for what you want, right?
Yeah.
And I think that many of us, we kind of have an idea, we kind of sort of understand where we want to go. But this idea of really getting steadfast in it and really embracing it, what we want to create, where we want to go, and have that guide our behaviors, right? Because many times, if 2020 has taught us anything, is that we have to sometimes be able to pivot, right?
That's right.
And I have another great friend who gave me the quote of 2020. This is my quote of 2020. He said, we need to be stubborn in our goals, but flexible in our methods.
Yeah.
stubborn in our goal, but flexible in our methods. And so we've all had this opportunity to be very steadfast of where we want to go and have that clear distinction, but then also be able to say, okay, which way am I being guided here? Right? Because we can follow what we think has to happen right over cliff, right?
That's right.
Or we can stop, be conscious about what's happening and take calculated adjustments, but also stay always true to where we want to be. And mm-hmm. I just think, you know, when I talked to you about all those students that got black belt, in some way, shape, or form, they had a vision for what they wanted to create.
Yeah.
And yeah, they pull a muscle, they have, you know, something happen at work, problems in the family, et cetera, but they continue to move through. That is what we're called to do as leaders, I believe. Mm-hmm. And not only talk about that and share that with the people we lead, but importantly, demonstrate it, because that's more powerful than anything.
Yeah, when we role model it.
No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, that's really important. And oh my gosh, I've always thought this too. It's like, and 2020 was a fabulous example of it, but you know, obstacles happen. And I think that they're just kind of like a normal part of life. All right. So have
where they are. And I think where most people also have difficulty with obstacles is they get clear about their vision about where they want to go. And they have this vision of how it's going to perfectly unfold, but they never create a plan for when things go awry.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when that customer says no? What happens when, you know, there's an illness and you have to take care of a child? So I think there's also power in being flexible and creating those contingency plans so that when obstacles do arise, you're like, okay, I got this, you know, and being careful not to panic when that happens, mm-hmm. right? Being steadfast, but okay, I can adjust, I can pivot. And man, I mean, certainly that happened with me this year, you know, being a speaker, I was off in 2020. I think I shared with you my best year ever. And yep. then all of a sudden, boom, and all those talks just started going away or deferred to 2021. And for instance, I had to learn how to become effective virtually,
yep.
where I thought I had it pretty well down in front of an audience, but now I had to take those same things and present it this way. And you know, the interesting thing is it helped me grow.
It really does.
When I get really honest with myself.
Mm-hmm. I was in the exact same boat. It's like, okay, put me in front of an audience or a workshop, you know, and I'm fine. And then it's like, okay, now, but that's not going to happen this year. So now what? And it's funny because I coached a lot of people last year and some of them are like, well, I'm just waiting for it to go back to normal. It's like, you might have a long wait.
Long wait. Well, it's interesting. I'd given a talk back in November and when I was meeting, you'll appreciate this as a speaker, and I was meeting with the event planner and she basically asked me to address that very thing. She said, I've got a whole group of people here. And she goes, they're amazing folks. And all they keep saying is, okay, we just got to hold on until it gets back to normal. And she said, I don't think it ever is. And I said, you know what? You're probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just have to ask you this too, just complete curiosity. I don't know how you feel about it, but because I had to switch to virtual, that kind of presentation skills that way, I found myself so many times over the last year, Chris, thinking, when I am back in front of an audience, I will be so much better. I feel like it took my game to a different level.
And I'll give you a personal example. So you might already imagine this, but when I'm up in front of a room and I have a talk that I use martial arts as the overlay, it's a pretty physical.
Yeah.
It's a pretty physical thing. I'm up and I'm moving around. I bring people up on stage. I'm teaching the moves. And I think it's really effective and I get great feedback on it. And now all of a sudden I'm like, oh man, I can't do that anymore.
That's right.
I have to expand. I have to rely a little bit more on my communicative skills and whatever. And I wasn't able to default to when I'm up on stage, it's almost like I'm teaching a class. I've been doing that for 40 years. I can do that in my sleep, right? Now I have to be much more expansive. And you're right. It helped me grow as well.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the upside of obstacles is that if we embrace it that way, we can grow so much.
Exactly.
Through it.
Exactly. Well, as I mentioned before, those are the things we tend to be proudest of.
Yeah.
The things we look back at our lives and go, man, I didn't give up there or I got through this. Man, it's what makes life rich, right?
It does. And rewarding. Mm-hmm. And so, okay. So your first step was the purposeful vision.
Right.
Do you have any tips for someone? Because we hear that. Do you have any tips that you share, like with your students or your audiences, about how to do that?
Well, the one thing that I always like to tell people is that where most of us, I think, get in trouble is when we have an obstacle in front of us is we have a tendency to look at it in its whole, right? And it's this big monstrous thing. And what I am always key on telling people is to the best of your ability is to break it down into small pieces and just take the next right step.
That's right.
And then the next right step. You know, when my students test for black belt, they have this 4-month period where they have to train. They train for 3 to 3.5 years to get to that point. But in the final 4 months of their training before their black belt test, they go through some pretty arduous training. They have to do 4,000 push-ups and 4,000 crunches and spar 120 rounds. So it's very physical. They also have to do things from a personal development and human development standpoint. So they have to do 400 random acts of kindness. They have to eat clean for an entire week. You know, no sugars, no processed foods. Getting my 10-year-old juniors off beer is tough, but I make it happen, right? And then they also have to spend a day of empathy. They spend a day either being blind, deaf, mute, or in a wheelchair. So they have this idea of what it is to move through adversity. And so part of it is having that experience. And when adversity comes, is to break it down. But then also, and this is a difficult concept for us, I think, us Westerners, is to not resist it. Doesn't mean that we give up. Surrender isn't giving in. It's just giving up our resistance to it. Does that make sense? And so just like a martial art punch coming at me or a punch coming at me, I could try to really fight against it, or I can just block it and let it go by and I can roll with it, right? This non-resistance. In the martial art of Hapkido, we call it the water principle of flowing with it. So we still stay focused on where we're at, but we break it down and then we focus on what's really in front of us versus our story. Right? Because it's so easy to get in story, isn't it? And I do it too. Oh my gosh, if this happens and this domino is going to fall and that's going to happen. Deal with what's in front. Stay present. And that's something I learned in martial arts. You know, when I was competing on national level and some, 6'4", 260-pound guys trying to knock me out, you got to be pretty present, right? You got to be present. So that carries over in life as well.
Yeah, that's really good. God, so much of that I like. When you said we can get caught up in the story, it can take us out of that being present. So
in fact, that's one of the things part of this whole thing of overcoming challenges, I basically have 5 questions that I have my coaching clients and audiences go through. And the first one is, what is really happening here? What's really happening? He said this, I got this phone call, this bill is due, this expense happened, whatever that is. That's what's really happening. But what we tend to do is we put a story around it. And so when we slow down and we say, this is what's happening, many times that's all it takes. It's like, whew, okay, take a breath. This is what's really happening. What's the next right step? And then we can move through it. But when we get caught in our heads, and I'm speaking from experience, my friend. So, I've been there definitely. That's where we get in trouble. Then the next thing is, what wants to happen here? So what do I mean by that? I mean, sometimes we have this focused vision of these steps we're going to take. And sometimes the universe says it's just not going to happen that way. Sometimes 2020 says you can't be in front of audiences anymore, Chris. So what wants to happen here? Are there ways of, again, staying focused on what we want, but being flexible in our methods? Mm-hmm. And then the final questions are pretty straightforward is, what do I need to keep doing? What do I need to stop doing? And what do I need to start doing? Because we get to a point probably doing some things well, so keep doing that. Then are there things that just are not working that maybe we've always done because we've always done them, right? Yep. And we need to get really focused on that and take a real objective view if this is really serving us. And then finally, what can I start doing? What's a creative way of dealing with this issue? And it's like, I think it's Tony Robbins that said, it's like the quality of our life is in direct proportion to the questions we ask ourselves. Yeah. So what questions are we asking, right? And I've always found those to be really powerful, not only in my own life, but in the people that I work with.
Yeah, those are good. I think anything that makes us slow down a little bit, take a breath and really think about it versus just getting caught up in that whirlwind of emotion that can sometimes be attached to it.
Without question. Another distinction would be is so often it's easy to work in a world of reaction.
Yeah.
So this happens and then we react to it, or this happens and we react to that, versus, as you said, stepping back, taking a breath, and rather than reacting, responding to it.
Yep.
So it becomes a choiceful response. And, you know, heck, if a car is beating down on me at 70 miles an hour and it's direct path, I have to react by jumping out of the way.
Right.
But that's that. But most of the time, we take that same fear energy and we put it into the other challenges we're facing, where we have some time to step back, slow down, take a breath, and respond.
Yeah. And it's powerful. It really is. It sounds so simple, doesn't it?
They usually are. They usually are, right? We're the ones that complicate it.
Yeah. Well, and I've always said this too, simple doesn't mean easy.
That's right. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Now, how does this relate to, because I know part of your, you know, other steps here, like the conscious persistence and what you call the inspired action, because I loved those as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, the conscious persistence is about taking that time and getting focused on what's in front of us and then responding to it, as I said. This consciousness that I'm talking about is, I want all your listeners to think about this is, have you ever had a time where you left work, or you left an appointment, and you drove home, and you came up in your driveway, and you had no flipping idea how you got there? Because that last 30 to 40 minutes, you were totally in your head on some or another. And so it is about slowing down. And I think that one of the things that martial arts helps with, and I'm a big meditator. And so it is about taking time each day to just being present with what is and being mindful. I mean, I'm a big believer that our habits that we do each and every day, they set us up for that success. So I have a morning routine that I do each and every day, and I call it the six keys of morning mastery. And the first one is meditation. And meditation doesn't need, an hour chanting Om. It's just about getting some time to connect with your breath. Some people might do it looking outside, drinking a cup of coffee. I mean, it's just getting present with that. And then I do mindful imaging, right? I'm focusing, I'm in my mind, I'm creating the day ahead as well as my life ahead. I'm mentally visualizing that. And then there's also mind treatment. So I'm doing positive affirmations of thought, right? Mm. And so that's what's going on inside of me. And then there's also this part of movement. Do something that we get moving. A lot of people will say exercise. Exercise sometimes has a bad connotation to it. Some people are adverse to it, but our bodies were designed to just move.
To move.
Yeah. Even if it's just taking a walk around the block, or like you shared, going out and cross-country skiing. When we connect and we ground in our body, now we're conscious, right?
Yeah.
We have this consciousness. And then it's also about motivation. What's something that can really, something you're reading or a tape you're listening to. And then finally, memoirs. Is being able to take some time and journal every day. And it just, a couple lines, what's going on inside of you? So that's how I start every day. And it really helps me get conscious so that when things, adversity comes, I can be persistent and I can be anchored in that way of being.
Yeah. It ties back to that whole thing about being present.
Yeah.
Because you can't be conscious really if you're not really, really present.
Right. And you really can't be at our best. Think of the times when we've said something or we've done something later on and we've regretted. Most of the time, it's because we really weren't conscious and anchored inside of ourselves. We were reacting. We were allowing an emotion. And that doesn't mean emotions are bad. It just means that we feel them and then we consciously let them go so that they're not the ones calling the shots.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes awareness and a lot of self-management sometimes.
And it's practice too, right?
Yeah.
I practice a lot of yoga. And one of the things I've always loved that they say about in the yoga community is yoga is a practice. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness is a practice. Being able to be consciously persistent is a practice. It's not something that we just end up doing one day. It's something that we're constantly making a regular part of our lives.
Yeah.
That's why I like to do it. Practice that first thing in the morning, because then it sets me up for the rest of the day. And it doesn't mean that I never falter, and it doesn't mean that I never screw up. I do all the time, but probably a lot less than I used to. So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. And a lot just more centered, it's so funny when you were talking there, Chris, and you said the thing about movement, because I think that I don't care if it's going for a walk or a paddle, whatever it is. Just remember as kids, like just going out to play.
Exactly.
Was that just like the best ever?
It's the best. And, you know, we lose sight of that because of this world of, and computers are great, right? They serve us immensely well. And, you know, too much of anything is usually a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
And so we move away from that and we don't make it a practice, or we're sedentary for months and then we're going to go to the gym for 2 hours a day for, you know, the rest of our lives. And that doesn't maintain. And then we stop and we get mad at ourselves and we get in this really vicious cycle. So, you know, there's a place in the world called green zones. I don't know, or blue zones, excuse me. I don't know if you've ever heard of blue zones.
No.
And this is a place in the world, I know for one, near the island of Okinawa off of Japan. And these are places that scientists have identified in the world where people live routinely into their 90s and then into their 100s. Okay.
Wow.
And there's a lot of factors around that. I mean, they eat really solid nutrition, right? And so that helps. And they also generally have a purpose in their life. They don't retire at 55 or 65 and then just sit on a chair. They still are active in their communities and they are in communities, which is another factor. But the final thing is every day they're moving. They're still out in the garden every day. They're moving. They're using their bodies in some, and we don't do that much in our society, right? Mm-hmm. We retire, now it's time to relax. And then that's when things, if you don't use it, we lose it.
It starts to break down.
Exactly, it starts to atrophy.
You know, and I know that you're also out here in Colorado. I'm up here in Grand Lake. And I'll tell you, Chris, when I'm out cross country skiing and I see people in their 70s and 80s out on their skis or biking, road cycling, what's really, I don't know if it's good or bad, but when they blow by me, like, all right, that's inspiring. That's my vision.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. I literally was taking a walk around Washington Park here in Denver yesterday.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a good pace. And this man in his mid 70s blew by me. He was doing his power walking.
Yeah.
I just smiled and I said, you go.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
It's inspiring to see that, you know? And I know a few times you've said taking the next right action. And I know when we talked before, you talked about inspired action. Is that kind of what you mean by that?
It is. Absolutely. And, you know, and so what I mean by inspired action is that I love this definition of inspiration versus motivation. I heard this from author Jack Canfield. He said that motivation is something that gets us going in the moment because someone might be on top of us, you know, screaming at us, encouraging us to do something. But inspiration is lighting a fire inside of us that lasts forever, right? And so I've always loved that distinction because the inspired action is when something is inspired us for us to move, then we are all about taking that action. And the other thing I think that's so important about that is that action doesn't need to be massive action. It can be. There are times when massive action is appropriate, but where I find it's more important is when people are committed to consistent daily action, even if it's 1%. And I love this distinction. What I mean by 1%, I call it the 1% solution. It's like if we just committed to ourselves to get 1% better every day, and we did that for a year, at the end of the year, we'd be 37 times better at that activity, right? Mm-hmm. Which is pretty cool. But what's neat is if you take that to the next year and you still maintain that pace, you wouldn't be 74 times better. You'd be 1,400 times better.
Wow.
Because it compounds, see?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so the idea there is that I always tell people when I coach and when I speak is choose those small things that you can make better on a daily basis. It's just like martial arts is the same way. You don't get to a black belt in an instant. You get it through consistent action over years. And what happens is through that consistent action, you begin to have these little mini breakthroughs. One of my favorite books is the book Mastery. And the author is escaping me right now, but he talks about the road to mastery is that most of the time in mastery, we're in a state of plateau. And then we actually take a little dip below our plateau, but then we bound up above the plateau. And then we plateau again, and then we take a dip, but then we bounce back up above the old plateau. So we're still moving on a northeast trajectory, but most of us think it needs to happen on that direct line, and it almost never does.
Almost so never does.
Yeah, it never does. And and so the idea there is that we're inspired to take that consistent action daily. And what happens is those good habits, they don't add up, they compound.
Yeah. I love the thing about the plateaus and the dips, because a lot of times when we experience those dips, we can get really frustrated with ourselves.
Oh, sure.
I mean, and it's hard.
And what I've found is when those plateaus hit, and I've learned this through experience, because I didn't always know this. It was very easy to get very discouraged, et cetera. But then I realized maybe what in the book Mastery hit me so hard is I've been experiencing that. It's like, wow, after a while, I feel a little better. And I'm a little better than I was before. And it's because I was able to weather the dip and stay consistent in the plateau. But that's not something in our society that's second nature to us.
No.
We tend to be, instant gratification kind of thing. And I think martial arts has certainly taught me that. And not only my own experience, but seeing a multitude of students go through it as well.
Yep. Yeah, it's a lot of powerful lessons that come out of that directly apply to life.
And life and business, exactly. And relationships for that matter. Mm-hmm. So how many times do we have those struggles that we go through? But it's just a matter of now I want to say there are times where, this is going on for years. It might be time to make a change, right?
But
you have to have that discernment. But generally, that's not the case. Generally, we have a tendency, I think, to bail out on the too soon than too late.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that very much. That's good. And I love just the simple actions that we can consistently take, because sometimes it can seem like it's such a big, challenge, or it's such a big task we're trying to do. But if you just break it down into simple steps and be consistent with it.
That's right. And, that's why I think most of us, what was the stat I read the other day? 25% of people after the first week give up on their New Year's resolution.
Yep.
Right. And because we think about it in this huge, big context, and then particularly when we slip up, right? We say we're going to do something consistent. We slip up, and then all the chatter in our mind starts going around like, well, that's what I always do. I always screw up, blah, blah, blah. And oftentimes people end up worse than they did before, because they even expand those bad habits to a more extreme way.
Yep.
And so it's just what I always tell people when I coach them, particularly on, intentions that they want, particularly in the new year, is make it super small and achievable, and then knock the heck out of those.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and you're building momentum versus always feeling like you're behind.
Yeah. And if you do stumble, just to recognize stumbling is part of learning.
That's right.
Exactly. But we stumble and then we judge ourselves, and then it just becomes this downward spiral, So
no doubt. I was on the call the other day with one of my clients, and we were talking about something he was taking some action on, and he had missed a day. And I said, hey, if you miss a day, it's not the end of the world. Just don't miss 2 days. Right? Yeah. Don't miss 2 days. And so, you give yourself a little bit of grace, but I think we are oftentimes our own worst critics.
Oh, geez.
And we also think we're the only ones that deal with that. We think everybody else is so disciplined and on point. We're all dealing with this.
We're all
dealing with it, right?
And the reason I'm chuckling there, Chris, is I think, because if you go on Facebook, it doesn't look like anybody's struggling with anything.
It's so true, right? It's so true. They're almost like there should be another version of Facebook, right? Where
the reality.
They're all hitting it. Yeah, exactly.
We were out skiing the other day, and there's this mom and her, like, I don't know, her daughter might have been 14, and they were taking pictures, and it was a beautiful backdrop. I'm like, oh, that's going to be on Facebook for sure. And as soon as they stopped taking the pictures, the girl just was like, just being awful to her mom. And I'm like, I'm guessing that won't make it.
That won't make the reel. Oh, that's
we
totally.
We all do that. And then we compare and we feel bad, because to your point, we think, well, everyone else is nailing it. No,
that's right.
We're all human. We all go through
Trust me. Well, and it's so interesting. That gets so ingrained in our psyches. And I remember early on in my speaking career, that was the thought that I had, to be Mr. Impervious to anything, right? And Mr. Gone. And I love telling the story because I absolutely adore my mother. I was on the phone with her, this is several years ago, and things weren't going particularly well in my speaking career. And I'm venting. Oh, this is not going well. That's not going well. And she's listening. And so I get done venting. You know, I'm now finally taking a breath. And she says, so you want to be one of those motivational speaker guys, huh? And I said, yes. And she said, do you think anyone's going to want to listen to you if everything in your life is perfect and you haven't had to gone through any hardships in your life? And I was like, boom, that was it.
That's great.
So it really helped me to say, wow, I'm going to be most impactful in whatever I do by being vulnerable to the best that I can, mm-hmm. because that's what people are going to respond to.
Yeah. And just being real about it.
Just real. Totally. Yeah.
So people who tell me they've got it all figured out and they've never stumbled, either they're really lucky or something else.
That's right. Wow. That's right. Yeah.
And now, Chris, this has been great. And you've alluded to it a couple of times. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about your books? Because I know you already have one, you're writing another one, and then, you know, more about what you do.
Yeah. Thanks so much for asking. Yeah. So my first book is called Black Belt Leadership. I think it's right over my corner, over my shoulder mm-hmm. here. And I wrote that back in 2013. And that has what I call my seven qualities of black belt leadership. So one of them is creating a purposeful vision, conscious persistence is part of that, as well as inspired action. And so I have a speaking business that basically adheres to those principles. I do keynoting. I also have a board breaking experience that I do corporately. So I call it the Discover Your Breakthrough Board Breaking Experience. And Ooh. Where I go in and I actually go into companies and I bring boards with me like we break in martial arts. And I help them identify a breakthrough area that they want to have in their life or business. And they literally write it on the board. But then on the other side of the board, they write what's been holding them back. What are the limiting wow. beliefs that have held them back? And then I systematically take them through how to do it physically. And then they come up in front of the room. Each one comes up and will do what I call their proclamation. They say what their breakthrough is. They say what's been holding them back. And then someone holding that board for them, they're looking at the side that has the limiting belief staring right at them. And then they break through it with their hand. And
Oh my goodness.
It's one of the coolest things I get to do. I can't tell you the literal breakthroughs that you see people go through and, you know, tears of joy. I mean, just the place erupting when people have struggled. And so my second book goes along with that because I've often wondered, will these people have this breakthrough experience, excuse the pun, but are they really experiencing the breakthroughs in their lives that they say they want? And yeah. so this latest book, Breaking Through, is taking three winning strategies, I call them, to have these breakthrough results in your life, business, and relationship. And so it's okay. What do you do now? You've identified your breakthrough. All right. How do you set the vision? What's the way you need to be? Where can you get capability partners? What are the steps you need to take? And so that book will be out hopefully in January. And in fact, I have an online course on it right now on my website as well.
Very cool. And what is your website?
My website is my name, chrisnatzke.com. So C-H-R-I-S, N as in Navy, A-T-Z as in zebra, K-E.com. And if your listeners want, when they go on there and visit, if they want to download, I've got a free report right at the top of the page there on the top 10 big ideas to create a breakthrough in your life. So if you'd like that, that'd be kind of my gift to them.
Nice. That's awesome. I appreciate that. Any final thoughts, Chris? Before we wrap up.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I'll tell you what, I was writing about this week. And, you know, each year we have hope, right, of a mm-hmm. new year. And I quite honestly have been more hopeful for this year than I probably have any others. But that hope also means that we need to take action, right?
That's right.
So get focused on what you want, have that hopefulness. But take that action, turn that hope into having a clear vision, being open to other ways of doing it, taking persistent action, and then living with that everything is rolling out for my highest good. If you have that H-O-P-E and you, I think, have hope in that way, we can really have a great year in 2021.
Nice. I love that. Well, thank you again so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And I think that the listeners will get a lot of value.
Awesome. It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Bobby.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. I had a lot of takeaways, and here are some of my favorites. Number one, I loved his story about his mentor who told him that I'll make you a champion. That shifted things for Chris and how it feeds into his desire to help others along that path. Number two, when you find something that you truly love, it may be hard work, but you love the work. And this reminds me of something way back in episode 10 when Dennis Stanton was on. Dennis was an All-American in college. He led the nation in scoring, and then he went on to play professional basketball. And Dennis talked about this as well when he talked about how he fell in love with the practice that went into mastering basketball. And that makes me think about how working on your craft is such an important part of the game. Number 3. Overcoming the hardships is where their lessons are learned, and it is usually what we are most proud of. I found it fascinating that only 2 students out of the more than 12,000 who Chris has coached to get their black belts started out with it being relatively easy. And again, I'm using the term relatively easy. But I found Chris's comment that for the vast majority who had to work harder, maybe they were more engaged because of the challenge. And I found that to be an idea worth pondering. It made me think about how growth often comes on the other side of challenge. And maybe that is what keeps people going when trying to master something that they love or something new. Number 4, a black belt is a white belt who never quit. Which goes to what Chris also said when he said that greatness awaits if we work with intention and we persist. Number 5, he also said that the taste of success can keep us going. And this is something that I really agree with. And it reminds me of something that Dan Pink wrote in Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And he said that there are 3 keys to intrinsic motivation, one of which is progress towards mastery, which I think is what Chris was talking about when he talked about that taste of success. Number 6. Something that I thought was a great metaphor for life is that the challenge isn't to be resisted. It's just there. Instead of resisting it, work through it, and maybe even embrace that it will help us take our game to a higher level, and it will help us grow. Number 7. I loved when we talked about just getting outside and moving. The body was meant to move. We feel better when we move. And it's so funny, because people will make comments to me about how much I exercise. And when they say that, it sort of takes me aback because I don't exercise. I play. I play by doing the things that I love, cross-country skiing, road cycling, disc golfing, paddleboarding, hiking, and whatever else catches my attention. But those are all things that I love to do. Therefore, it isn't exercise. It's play, like when we were kids and we had fun with it. Number 8, consistent right actions lead to mastery. And 9, stumbling is a part of the learning. Again, those were just a few of my takeaways, and I'm sure that you had your own list. On another note, I know that sometimes we don't make the progress towards our goals that we'd like. Sometimes there is just something holding us back. It's as though we have 1 foot on the gas and 1 foot on the brakes. Because I've seen it so often in coaching over the years, I'm putting the finishing touches on a guide to help identify if we are falling prey to one of the biggest derailers of our goals, and I call it the just wait voice. This is an insidious little voice that shows up and encourages us to wait just as we are about to act. I hate that voice. I hate it, and I want to help combat it with what I've learned over the years. If you're interested, you can go to www.unyielded.net/goalkiller for the free guide. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where we are committed to bringing stories of growth and triumph. If you found it helpful, please consider leaving us a review on Apple, as well as sharing it with someone who could benefit from the message of hope and positivity so that they can thrive no matter what.